This Sunday is the last Sunday of what we're calling the intentional discipleship triduum. Triduum means 3 days. We've been talking about the distinction for the last three Sundays, the distinction between a cultural Catholic and an intentional disciple. Remember, I'm not going to spend too much time on cultural Catholicism, just a review of what that is if you haven't heard it before. A cultural Catholic is someone, and all of us have been or are cultural Catholics, and all of us are called to make the transition from cultural Catholicism to intentional discipleship. A cultural Catholic, when I was growing up, I was a cultural Catholic. Sometimes not even a cultural Catholic, even though you can't get un-Catholic. I still have a great memory of when I was a few months ago. This is just an aside, but a few months ago I went to the Show of Faith, you know, the radio show I do after this Mass. And there was a Seventh-day Adventist there as one of the other guests on the radio. And at the end, we went outside, and as we were walking, he turned to me and he said, "Father, is there any, what ritual, I have several members of my church that would like to formally leave the Catholic Church and become members of the Seventh-day Adventists. Is there a ceremony or something they have to do to leave the church?" And I looked at him and I said, "Let me ask you first a question. Do you have children?" And he said, "Well, yeah." He said, "What is the process that they would have to go to formally leave your family and not for you not to be their father anymore?" And he looked at me and I said, "They'll always be my children." And I said, "Bingo," to use a Catholic term, "bingo. There is no process to make yourself un-Catholic. Whatever you want to do, you can tear up your baptism certificate, you can stomp on the ground, you can yell at God, you can come in here and curse me out, you're still one of ours. Sorry." But a cultural Catholic is, even when you decide to leave, you're still there. Once you're baptized, you're there. And a cultural Catholic is basically somebody, it can be a big range. It can be, "Well, I was brought up Catholic, but I don't know anything about it. Periodically, I'll go to Mass, but it's fine. I don't believe, I don't act on any of that stuff." Or it could be a fairly good cultural Catholic. "I go to Mass and I don't do bad stuff, so I'm not particularly focused on Jesus, but I try to go to Mass." All those are cultural Catholicism. Now, today, I'm going to just make the transition to, and the transition occurs sometimes quickly and sometimes over years. It occurs as people make the transition to intentional discipleship. So what's intentional discipleship? Well, it's when you make a decision to be a student of Jesus. Now notice I didn't say a disciple, because, you know, sometimes we use words and we forget what they mean. They just have that religious sounding, you know, tone to them. To be a disciple of Jesus means you are a student of Jesus. Now, what is a student? A disciple is a student. He is our teacher. So what is the course that we're taking? How to be human. Now, you might say, "Well, what do you mean? I know how to be human." No, you don't. you don't know how to be human. One of the teachings that most Catholics forget about is the teaching of original sin. Original sin. See, a lot of times we get this wrong. People think, well, yeah, you mean God is damning the whole world because some idiots ate an apple. That makes a lot of sense. That's not it. That's the story. The story. In Genesis, first of all, in Genesis never says it's an apple. It just says fruit. Okay? And the whole point is that it's a literary story to tell you the point. It's not supposed to be historical. And what's the point? The tree is called the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And knowledge of good and evil in the ancient world, when you knew something, it meant you had control over good and evil. So it's actually the tree of the ability to control good and evil. Now, what would that mean? It would mean that instead of having to follow God and live according to his laws and his, and the way he made us to be, that Adam and Eve were receiving a choice. And the choice was, look, you don't have to follow what God told you to do anymore. You can make the decision. What is the difference between good and evil? So if God says, don't do that, that is evil, you can say, I disagree. It's good. I have control over what is good or evil. And I say that what you say is evil, I'm calling it good. That's the temptation. It's the temptation not to be dependent on God. Of course, it's a lie, because Adam and Eve can't exist without depending on God. But the devil, he's called the father of lies, and he makes them believe that they can actually be as if they were their own gods, deciding everything for themselves without reference to their creator. The ability to self-design. I can be whatever the hell I want to be. And by the way, saying hell in a homily is a good thing. Okay? It's a good thing. It's a good word in church. And so what happens is, we, the moment that that happens, what happens in the story? They realize they're naked. Now, what is the meaning of that? Meaning, they have no idea who they are. They look at themselves and go, what in God's green earth is this? And they don't know what it is. Now, but that's just the symptom. The deeper is that they don't know who they are, who they are, or what they're for. They have no idea of the why of their existence. They are totally lost, and they don't even know what it is like to be a normal human being. Now, because God is love, he begins to chase people. That's the whole Old Testament, is God chasing people, trying to get them to come back. And ultimately, Jesus comes into the scene, and Jesus and God says, basically, I love just applying this. Remember that old saying, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. Well, God said, basically, he was saying to us, man, you guys have screwed this up so royally that I'm going to become one of you so that I can show you what it means to be a normal human being. Jesus is the only normal human being. He is it. Now, if you think you're normal, it's just because you and I are comparing each ourselves to each other, and we find people that are normally screwed up, just like we are. And so you say, see, you and I are look alike. I'm normal. No, you're not. No, you're not. To the degree that you're not like Jesus, you are abnormal. Now, an intentional disciple is a person who has come to the realization that they are totally screwed up and that they need somebody to help them become what they were supposed to be. Somebody to help us become normal. And then you decide, who is that going to be? Is there any definition of normality? And the answer is yes. God became human to show us what it means to be normal. And so you say, okay, I know I'm messed up. I want to follow you. I want to be a student of yours. I want to be your disciples. And I am making that decision. I want to decide what my life is going to be like by being your follower. You know, we as human beings are the only animals that have the ability to make the decision on what kind of person you are going to be. No other animal. No other animal. You don't go to your dog and say, are you going to be a good dog or a bad dog? Okay? You can train him, but he has no ability to make free decisions. Good bird, bad bird. Now, what kind of dog should I be? You don't have that. Okay? And so the human being is the only one, because we're made in the image and likeness of God. We have freedom. So what's an intentional disciple? A person who has made the decision to be a disciple of Jesus, to be a student of Jesus. Now, I'm going to stop right there talking about intentional disciple, and I'm going to focus on one specific aspect, because this is the last Sunday of the Triduum. And what I'm going to do is I want to focus on the mission of what an intentional disciple is supposed to do, not just in terms of your own person, but you and I have been given a mission. Did you hear it in the gospel? Jesus gave us a mission. He said, quote, go to all nations. Baptize, make them what? Students. Make them disciples. So what's the first thing that we're supposed to be doing as a church? This is a school of discipleship. This is what we are here to do. We are here to learn how to be disciples. So go and make disciples. Then how do you do that? Well, then he says, baptize the sacrament. It is a visible, that thing right in there, that big tank, is supposed to be where the outward sign, because God is invisible. And so in baptism, we use the gift of water to help to show you what God is doing in an invisible way. We do that all the time. You know, when you give flowers or when you smile or when you give a person a kiss, you know, I always like to do this with teenagers. I'll go, you see this kind of skin right here on my lip? Right here? That's called mucous membranes, right? Why is it that you join mucous membranes with another human being? It's called a kiss, by the way. Have you ever gone up to anybody and say, sweetie, would you like to touch oral mucous membranes? Sounds really romantic, doesn't it? Okay? You can't do that. But what does it mean? A kiss has a meaning. It's the outward sign of an internal disposition, of attraction. You're communicating something that is beyond the physical element of what is being communicated. Baptism uses water to tell you that God is making you, choosing you. Before you choose Him, He chooses you, and He calls you to be His student through Jesus. And so there he says, go. Now notice, go is don't stay. And notice the disciples didn't found a monastery or a religious community in a cave. Immediately, they're told, go. And where? To everywhere. And you teach. Because then he said, make them disciples, make them students. Baptize them, and then he says, teach them. Now notice that. The mission of the church is to teach. And teach them to follow everything I have commanded you. Okay. That is our marching orders. That is the team mission. The moment you accept to be a disciple of Jesus, you are in some way or another obliged to take up some aspect of the mission. What a cultural Catholic does is they go, okay, I'll go to church. Is Father Mario preaching? Oh God, it's going to take a long time. Okay? That's a cultural Catholic. You're supposed to be saying, okay, how am I going to push forward the mission? How are you going to push forward? I'm always amazed when I hear cultural Catholics. I don't go after them because God will do it in His own time. But it's always amazing to me. I always imagine a football team. I always imagine a guy who takes the rule book of football. And he says, okay, I'm going to learn this. And he learns it. And he goes to the coach and he says, hey, coach, I want to be on the team. And I read the rule book and I know I'm never going to do anything against any of those rules. And the coach says, well, okay, great. Can you run? Oh, no, I don't run very fast. Can you block? No, I'm fairly fragile. Can you pass the ball? Oh, no, I can't pass the ball. He keeps on going like this, and the coach says, but I won't ever break any of the rules. I promise. Scott's honor. I'm not going to break any of the rules. Big deal. You're not part of the team. Why? Because being part of the team is pushing the mission of the team forward. That's what it means to be an intentional discipleship. Now, how each of you is going to do that, if you're considering being an intentional disciple, how are you going to do that? Everybody's got a different way to do it. God has made us all different, and we're supposed to be doing it differently. But every single one of you, everyone, has to be part of the team and part of the mission. You have to be. If you remember that one time when Jesus was walking by a tree and he saw that the tree had no fruit, and the guy, the helper, says, well, let me work with it and see if I can get it to produce fruit. And Jesus says, okay, work with it, but if it doesn't produce fruit, cut it down. Cut it down. It is unacceptable to be fruitless. It is unacceptable to God to be fruitless. That's all over the Gospels. All over the Gospels. Remember the guy who's the three guys that are given three different amounts of money? And one of the guys says, I'm going to bury it. And the master comes back and the guy says, here it is. I'm so sorry. I was so afraid of you that I buried it, but here it is. I haven't done anything wrong. And the master, I always think that the master should have gone, oh, I'm so sorry you felt that way. You didn't have to. You should have at least put that in the bank. And it's okay. What's the end of that parable? He says, take it away from him and give it to the one who has the most and kick him out. Because it is unacceptable to be a lazy Catholic. Unacceptable. And so, the question is, how are you going to do it? Now, please understand, everyone has to do it differently. Let me start out from this perspective. Do you know who the patroness, the saint, that is the patroness of the foreign missions for the Catholic Church? Who is the patroness of the foreign missions for the Catholic Church? You know who it is? Saint Teresa the Little Flower. Now, Saint Teresa the Little Flower, if you've never heard of him, she was a nun, lived in the last century, and she entered the convent when she was 18, maybe 16, 17, and she died in her mid-20s. Never left the convent. Never left the convent. Now, you'd think that the Catholic Church might put somebody as a missionary, you know, a patron of the missions. Then all St. Francis Xavier, who went to Japan, or different people who have gone and given their lives for the missions. No. They picked a nun who entered the convent and never left. Why? Why? Because it was a statement, an intentional statement. And the intentional statement was, Saint Teresa, in her journals, talks about doing everything she had to do, including clean the floors. It's an anecdote about her cleaning the floors. And every single tile that she would clean, because she had to clean in between the tiles, she would offer her prayer for the priests and sisters in the missions. And she would go around doing that, constantly praying for the missionaries. What the church is saying is that is being part of the mission of the church. If you're caring for an elderly person, if you have a bunch of kids and you're taking care of them, or if whatever you're doing, if you offer it for the mission that we have been given, that's how you are part of it. That's how you are part of it. And also, in whatever way you can help in terms of your energy, in terms of, you know, becoming a lector, becoming a Eucharistic minister, visiting the sick, taking communion to the sick, being a CCE teacher, being part of the music at Mass, helping other people to pray, you are a member of the team in mission. And if your job is too much, at least, at the very least, you need to help us with your finances. You know, let me tell you, Father Scott Blake is the other guy. He's hardly ever here. I mean, he's at other masses, but I usually do this mass. Father Scott he's really helped me a lot. He said, being an intentional disciple, the definition of it is, everything I do, with everything I have, after I say, Lord Jesus, I believe. Now, when I heard that, I went, whoa, that's excellent. Everything I do, with everything I have, the moment I say, Lord Jesus, I believe. The moment you become an intentional disciple. And so, in whatever way you can support us, and one of the other things that Father Scott said, I love it, because I've always struggled about talking about money, because people are constantly going on to church. It's always talking about money. Father Scott said one time I heard it and I went, whoa. He said, if you ever go to a church that never asks you to support us with money, you're going to a church that's not doing a darn thing. You're going to a church that's doing nothing. Because it takes finances to be able to go on mission. It takes finances to keep up the church so that we can teach. It takes finances to be able to equip teachers. It takes finances to help educate people. It takes finances to be able to go out to the sick and minister to them. It takes finances to provide rooms for prayer meetings. It takes finances to keep it clean. It takes finances. And we need your help. That's why I always tell people, look, man, the only sin you can commit during the offertory when you're giving, taking the collection is to say, okay, what's left over? Let me see what I got left over. And then, a couple of bucks, and throw it in. Because you know what you're doing? You're saying, okay, God, whatever, but I'll give you what's left over. No, first it goes me and my family, and the rest is what's left over. Folks, not good. Not good. Especially, now let me just make this one side issue. This summer, I'm asking you, please, increase what you're giving for at least $5 a week. Because you know what happens during the summer? I don't know where people go, but attendance kind of goes like this. And it goes back up when it goes to school. And you know what happens to our bills? It goes like this. No, because I can't remember. I think the last time I checked during the summer, the bills for electricity, you know, it's cool in here. The electricity bill was like $17,000 per month. Per month. Almost an entire Sunday offering goes to electricity. If we're going to do what we're going to do, folks, we got to all do it together. Your money is your outward sign of your work. You're offering your work for the mission of Jesus. Everything you do with everything you have, the moment you say, I believe. And so in intentional discipleship, what you're saying is, I'm part of the team. That mission that Jesus just gave belongs to you and to me. It's not just about the priest. You know, sometimes I think the bishop appointed me, and basically he appointed me to be the quarterback. Okay? I get to make the calls on which plays we're going to run. But if I don't have a team in front of me, if I don't have a team blocking, passing, and being able to do all the things that a team in football does, this is not going to go well. And so I need you to be part of the team. How you do it, that's up to you. Caring for the sick at home, that's part of the team. Raising your children, making sure that they are educated in as disciples of Jesus, that's part of the team. It's all part of the team. But you've got to say, how can I do it? How can I help in some way or another? Okay, it's time for me to shut up. Okay, people are going, it's about time, Father. Yeah. Well, you know, let me tell you, if you ever come to St. Cyril's, if you're coming here to get out of going to Mass, going to a quickie Mass, boy, did you make a mistake. Boy, did you make a mistake. We don't do fast food here. Thank you. We are a full service restaurant of the Lord. Okay? We do appetizers, and you see, like beginning to Mass, I gave you a little appetizer. Okay? And we do full service. 3 courses, 5 courses sometimes. Okay.